B-Pod Studios.
All right, now let's get the general manager in here. The great Matt Klentak joining us. Mr. Klentak, how are you, sir? We'll put on your headphones here. And thanks for coming up. And it was good to see you last night, obviously.
My pleasure. Nice to be here.
Yeah, did you notice that there was a different buzz in your party last night than had been?
Yes. also in the ballpark, also everywhere.
Yes.
I haven't been back to Philly all week, but I suspect it's a different buzz there,
well,
too.
We've been to Philly, and it's crazy. And the way you flip this town on its ear with the moves is amazing, with the final piece coming together. So let's go back to the start. In the off season, your season ends, 2018 season ends. You guys get together. What's the conversation? What are you listing that you need at this point?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the way the 2018 season ended was not what we were hoping for. We pretty much fell flat on our face. So we went back to the drawing board and looked at the team and tried to identify where we could improve, where we had flaws, and you know, what some potential solutions to that might be. And I think what we identified kind of fell into three key themes. Number one was our team defense overall, which was, as you know, not good. And, you know, there's a variety of different ways you can choose to address that. And I've said throughout the offseason, you're not likely to go from worst to first in one offseason, nor because of only, you know, a series of a couple of transactions. That's going to take some time, but certainly we wanted to do everything we could to improve the defense. Number two was try to address the back end of our bullpen and particularly try to improve against good quality left-handed hitters late in the game. And then third was, you know, at every turn, if we could try to improve our offense, we wanted to do that. We were not a bad offensive team last year, but certainly an inconsistent one. So anything that we could do in that regard was going to be helpful. So it's great to identify those things, you know, and again, I don't think any of those are particularly surprising to anybody. Anybody who watched or followed our team last year likely identified all those same things that I just said. But, you know, then it becomes a matter of going through the off season and trying to find opportunities to hit on those. And, you know, we were fortunate that, you know, quite a few things came together and allowed us to address those. But, you know, it's at the beginning of the offseason, it would have been impossible to project that we would have made, you know, this trade followed by this signing, followed by this signing, followed by this trade, followed by another. You can't, but you try to make sure that every transaction that you do, work on, you know, does fit your key themes.
It's pretty much the perfect off season. And the one thing that makes it the perfect off season, of course, is Bryce Harper, and we'll get to that in a second. But the first guy you grab is McCutchen. Now, he comes to a team that, I don't know, what were you discussing with him that interests him so much in the Phillies?
So I'm actually going to back up, I think, one transaction, because what allowed us to target Andrew McCutchen was actually the trade we made with Seattle. That was really in which we acquired Gene Segura, Juan Nicasio, and James Pazos, and sent J.P. Crawford and Carlos Santana to the Mariners. That really was the springboard for our offseason in a lot of respects, because what that did, not only did it add a perennial 300 hitting all-star shortstop in Gene Segura, but it also provided us the bullpen depth that we'd been talking about. Nicasio and Pazos both, you know, should help us in that regard. And as important as anything, and Phillies fans know I'm a huge Carlos Santana fan, and I still am. But it allowed Rhys Hoskins, it's going to allow now Rhys Hoskins to play regularly at first base instead of in left field. So that's a transaction that really hit on all three of the themes I mentioned earlier: improve the offense, improve the defense, and improve the bullpen. And in doing so, it opened up left field. And that is then when we started to get back to your question, that is when we started to target, all right, now we have an opening in left field. Who are some players that we can go target? Obviously, Harper was one of them, but Harper's market was not moving all that quickly in December. So, you know, we pivoted and we started to identify a few other players and ultimately worked the agreement with Kutch. And what we like about Kutch is, I mean, there's a few things. Number one, and you've probably noticed this, Mike, as I'm sure Phillies fans have already, he's really a good guy, a good teammate. He's fun. He's funny. He's loose. He's been on good teams. He's been around the block. He's just he's a winning player. And I think, you know, that's something that can really help our young team. On top of that, he does a lot of things that we like offensively. He does not chase out of the zone. He takes pitches. He works walks. He grinds at bats. He has power. So all those things, which he's been doing for years, are appealing to us. And on top of that, I think there's a chance for some hidden upside in this guy because he's played virtually his entire career in Pittsburgh and a year in San Francisco, which are both very difficult places for hitters, but right-handed hitters especially, to hit. And, you know, the 1 month he went to Yankee Stadium at the end of last year, he just took off. So we think that his style and his approach in our ballpark, which, you know, typically plays as hitter-friendly, may in fact lead to even some improvements for Andrew McCutchen.
Well, was your idea to bring Santana in last year, not to go backwards, that you were confident that Reese Hoskins could play left field? And in retrospect, was the Santana thing a mistake for your regime?
It's hard for me to, I mean, certainly I think we overestimated Reese's ability in left field based on a small sample in 17. So I'm not going to say we threaded the needle beautifully on that one, but it's hard for me to characterize the signing as a mistake when we're able to trade him a year later and, you know, clear all the money and he can get traded again to another team. Like, there's, I think the contract was priced appropriately. Look, the 2018 Phillies were an imperfect team, and we were an imperfect team at the very beginning of the season, not only at the end when we started to fade. We had to try different things. Cap had to be more creative and try different things on the field. We had to try to fit a bunch of imperfect parts together, because to not try something different was not going to lead to a good outcome. We just weren't talented enough. And so that was part of the appeal in bringing in Santana. And if it played out that Hoskins really took to left field, we love the offensive profiles of both those guys. It didn't work. You know, it proved that it was too much for our team defense to overcome. So, you know, we addressed it. We made the moves we made this offseason so that we didn't sit on our hands and feel sorry for ourselves.
All right, so the two guys are out there, and the whole world knows it, and the whole Philly fan base knows it, and it's like you had to get one of those guys. Of course, the fan base almost screamed that, and I think you guys thought the same thing, although you did have a pretty good offseason. The whole thing had to come together to get one of those guys, which, when you're juggling that kind of a situation, do you have to rate one over the other, or was it okay that you could have got either one of them?
Yeah, I think the first point, Mike, is we, and I said this earlier in the offseason, we were not in a position to, you know, have our entire offseason defined by signing one of those guys, because the likelihood was that it was going to take some time for their markets to develop and for those players to sign. And if you sit around and wait for one of them, you're missing out on way too many other opportunities. So you have to go pursue other things that are out there. And I'm glad that we did that, because if we had waited until, you know, the eve of March to sign Bryce Harper, and that was our only offseason move, while I think there would be excitement, I don't think the team would be nearly as good as what it is right now. So, you know, we had to make our other moves, you know, independent of whether Bryce or Manny was ultimately going to sign here. But, you know, we pursued all those other moves with, you know, in the back of our mind, the possibility looming that we may sign one of those guys. So you try not to block off the potential positions that they play. You try to make sure that you're managing your payroll in such a way that you can accommodate a major commitment like that. And then you just have to play it out. And like, look, I get the frustration, and I heard all the the comments, the chatter throughout the offseason. Just do it already. Just pay the man. What are we waiting for? Like, I hear that stuff. Get it. I wish it was that simple.
Yeah, I said 350 for 10. Let's get it done.
If it was, we would do it. And it's not, but listen, it's not about saving the $20 million in that example. It's if the player's not ready to sign, he ain't going to sign. So all you're doing at that point is bidding against yourself, spinning your wheels, and not really getting any traction. So you have to wait until the market develops however it's going to develop, and the timing is right. And as much as one team might want to push that, or in some cases a player may want to push that, if you're not getting that reciprocity, then it ain't going to work. So I felt it, I heard it, I get it, but it's just the reality of free agent market.
But in your mindset of that, and I understand that totally, the market has to set itself, but you're also in danger of losing a guy by not bidding against yourself. Like, by going overboard, you can get the guy. By letting the market set itself, you may lose him. I mean, right?
That sounds good. I don't know
right?
if that's true.
You don't know it's really? Like, if you had come out with 350 from the start,
Mike,
do you think he would have turned that down?
I have no idea, no. But I think he turned down 300 from the Nationals mm-hmm. right out of the chute.
Yeah.
You know, without blinking, mm-hmm. as that's what we're told. So, and there are countless examples in not only this year, but in baseball history where, you know, someone makes an aggressive push. Oftentimes it's the prior team. The team mm-hmm. is trying to retain the player, but they make an aggressive push to try to retain the player. The player says, no, I want to test the market. And then you know what happens? They find out market's not quite as good as I thought. The other team has gone about, done their business, and they can't go back there. So, like, there's a lot of examples of it working the other way. So I know it sounds good, and I know that the anticipation was there, and everybody's eager, just end this already. Like, I get it. It was a long off season for me too, but sometimes you just have to take it as it comes. And we, you know, Bryce Harper didn't miss any games. He didn't miss a paycheck. You know, he's a little behind in terms of getting his spring training reps, but he's going to be just fine. And whether they sign in December, January, or February,
here was the thing that scared fans, I think, because you got, at first, the reports came out that you had kind of favored Machado a little more than Harper. And then Machado signs, and then the statements that come out from you guys is that you weren't willing to go that high for him. So fans are thinking, if you're not willing to go that high, are you willing to go that high for Harper? And that's where panic set in right. the fan base.
Yeah.
So how did you deal with that part of it?
How did I deal with the panic?
Well, not the panic, but the notion that you weren't willing to go $300 million for Machado, why would you be willing to go that for Harper?
Because every player's different. And the, you know, I don't want to sound overly nerdy or objective here, but the way that we evaluate players is not, it's not as formulaic as some think it is. You know, there's a lot of different inputs, a lot of different components to our thinking. And yes, you have to have a walk away point. I'm not going to run from that. I've said that this offseason. I will continue to say that as long as I'm in this industry. To not have a walk away point in this game is bad business, because a good agent on the other end will sniff that out, and they will just keep letting you come and come and come and come to them until you're doing something horrible, making a very bad decision. You have to be willing to walk away. You have to have alternatives. And frankly, you know, in a lot of respects, that's what our JT Realmuto trade was. That was an alternative to signing Bryce Harper or Manny Machado, because we knew we were developing a good team. We wanted to continue to push, and it just so happened that the alternative came to fruition before the free agent market did. So the mechanics and the timing of that are a little odd to comprehend, but that's really what that was about. And then, as it turns out, well, we also signed Bryce, and now we got a damn good team.
Yes.
So so it worked out great for everybody, but you can never allow, in any business, whether it's baseball or anything else, you cannot allow yourself to find yourself in a situation where you have no alternative. You are apt to make very bad decisions if you're in that spot.
I'm talking to Matt Klentak, general manager of the Phillies. The week that he signs was one of the most amazing weeks that I've seen in Philadelphia sports, as far as the emotions going up and down. There were reports that you guys weren't really happy in the middle of the week, that you walked away from this place thinking that you weren't going to get him. That got the back to Philadelphia. Of course, everybody's panicked. And then within a short period of time, boom, you get him. What transpired in those final couple days, those final 48 hours or whatever?
So two things on that front. Number one, again, I said this earlier, I'm well aware of kind of the ups and downs and the rumors and everything that was taking place throughout the offseason. And I suppose, had the benefit here of knowing when rumors were true and not true. So I didn't ride the wave, the highs and lows, nearly as much as I think our fans did, because frankly, most of the stuff that was out there was just not true. And I get, if you're a fan and that's all you see, well, of course you're going to believe that. I certainly understand.
What was out there was you weren't willing to go that high. He didn't like
Bryce
Philadelphia.
Bryce didn't want to come to Philly.
Yeah, right.
He didn't
want
like Kapler.
Right,
like,
right.
These
all
things
that
are
stuff.
Not true. I was in the meeting in January with you know, John Middleton, Andy McPhail, Ned Rice, Gabe Kapler, myself, and I'm watching the manager and this player connect. It's amazing to watch these two guys interact, the passion for the game, and then you start reading that they don't that it's not a fit. It's like, well, it's just it's convenient narrative if the kid doesn't sign here, I guess, right. But it's not true. So anyway, I had the benefit of knowing, I guess, more of what was going on than most. But no, in terms of the last 48 hours, there were, and this is really true of the prior couple of months, there were a lot of ups and downs. There were times we would have a phone call or a meeting where you felt really optimistic and, damn, this seems like a really good fit. And there were other times where, you know, we didn't have quite the connection in the conversation, whether that was with, usually it was with Scott Boras, not so much with Bryce, but, and you started questioning, you know, are we really heading down the right path? You start reading the rumors, which many of which are probably not true about other teams and their involvement. And, you know, we start to wonder ourselves. So, you know, when you strip it down, all you can really do is control the what you're willing to put forth, the way you're going through your recruiting pitch, and take your chances with that. And that's, you know, all along I kept saying, like, I feel really good that we're putting our best foot forward. I feel really good that, you know, our owner's not going to cheap out on this. It doesn't mean he's going to sign with us per se, but we're not being cheap about this. And if we're putting our best foot forward from a recruiting sense and we're offering a lot of money, that oftentimes is a good recipe. And that's ultimately the way it worked out.
Did you guys say to yourself, at this point, we can't lose them? I know we've done other things, but it's gotten so far, we can't possibly lose them now.
This is where I fall back on what I said before. You can't ever put yourself in that spot. You know, you can be more aggressive at certain times than others, and certainly we were with a record-setting contract here. But you can't, you know, you can play hypotheticals all you want, but it's you can't ever allow yourself to be in that situation.
Were you nervous
as
at all?
Difficult
when,
as that
when
is.
The Giants came in last, were you? Because we had Bryce on yesterday, and he said the Philly thing feels good. It just feels good. And then he took the meeting with the Giants, and he says out of courtesy. But from your viewpoint, did you think that this could be a last chance to steal him away?
You know, I mean, there was nothing we could really do about it. You know, we were aware he had a meeting coming up. I think it was Sunday. We didn't know who the team was. We later read about it, so we figured it out if that was true. But if you just don't know what another team's willing to offer. And look, if I'm in Bryce Harper's shoes or any free agent's shoes, of course I'm going to play out that market. Of course I'm going to talk to everybody who wants to talk to me. Why wouldn't you? Because you don't know until you sign on the dotted line with someone what your alternatives are. You have to play that out to the end. So if I'm him, I'm doing the exact same thing.
This, Matt, looks like a team where you've got a lineup now. I mean, and Gabe said it yesterday on the show that he's not going to have to tinker as much. But there are a couple spots that people worry about. They worry about the center field spot. They worry about third base because it looked like Franco had fallen out of favor last year. And you're coming back with both those guys. So what do you see now that there's not as much pressure on them? They'll probably be in the back half of the lineup. Tell me about that.
I mean, you actually kind of answered your own question. I think, you know, talking about specifically Odubel and Franco, but these guys during our rebuild were the centerpieces, right? They were the best players on bad teams, and so they hit third, fourth, fifth. And they hit right in the middle of the lineup. They were the young guys, and as a result, there were a lot of there was a lot of scrutiny on them. And I'm not saying that wasn't deserved because they were that's what we were selling at that point. They were our best players. But I think you just said it, Mike. I think now all of a sudden, when you look at the lineup around them, the depth in that lineup, the quality in that lineup, they don't have to be the focal points anymore. They're not going to be. They're going to be one of, or in each of their cases, one of eight guys in the lineup, a really deep lineup that really has no holes. And I don't think either of them will be the lightning rod that they've been because there's just so much more margin for error in our lineup now. And I think there's a part of me that wonders if kind of just loosening up on them a little bit and letting them relax and be a little bit more comfortable, a little bit more confident, knowing that the weight of the world and the team is not, in fact, on their shoulders alone, if that doesn't somehow make them, you know, even better this year. So, look, I don't not specifically to these guys, we're not going to be the first perfect team in the history of baseball. There's a reason we've never had a team go 162-0, and it's not going to happen this year, and it's never going to happen. So we will, I'm sure, throughout the year face some challenges. Somebody will struggle. Somebody will get hurt. It will test our depth. We will blow a save this year. Newsflash. Like, we're not going to be perfect, but, you know, we're building a team in such a way that, you know, we feel like we're well supported in a lot of different positions. You know, we've got some, you know, both Odubel and Quinn, for example, are dealing with nagging injuries right now. We feel like we're well insulated to support that group. Now, I don't want to have another outfielder injury or two, but then that would test our depth. But right now, we're okay. Same thing on the infield, where we've got, you know, five guys, including Kingery, that can play a variety of different spots. That puts us in a good position. We've got, you know, the best catcher in baseball in Real Muto, and we got Butera and Knapp, you know, both really quality guys competing to be the backup. And I don't mean to be long-winded, but we got six bona fide Major League starters, including Eichhoff, plus a AAA rotation that are all ready for their opportunity. We don't know how they'll be when they get there, but there's only so much more they can accomplish in AAA. And in the bullpen, as it stands right now, we're going to have to option some guys who don't deserve to be optioned because we have, you know, more good players than there are bullpen spots. So as I look at opening day and the way we're lining up, there aren't many things that I would do differently. That doesn't mean it's all going to go perfectly. I know that, but there's only I can't predict who's going to get hurt and when and what we're going to need. So you just try to cover yourself as best.
Last question, I'll let you go. The rotation right now, the 3-4-5, you're going to ride with that until whatever.
For two reasons. Number one, the answer is yes, but for two reasons. Number one, because we really like those guys, and I think we are going to see a breakout from one or more of those guys this year. I know we have not addressed the rotation in terms of a change in personnel, but we've addressed the rotation in these ways. We've made the bullpen better, which is going to protect the leads better. We've made the defense better, which is going to allow the starters to, you know, hopefully pitch better. We've also improved the offense, which is going to give the starters a lot more margin for error. So that's the first reason. We are confident that our group is going to be better this year. But the second reason is because we need to do this. In order for the franchise and to support the type of payroll that we're now starting to have, fitting in a Bryce Harper and an Andrew McCutchen and a David Robertson and Gene Segura and an Aaron Nola extension and other things, we have to identify spots on the roster where we can incorporate young players who, you know, by virtue of their inexperience, don't make quite as much, in order to properly balance our roster and allow us to grow. And these young starters we just talked about are certainly fit that mold, as do a lot of our young pitchers, both rotation and bullpen in AAA. That's something that's really important for the future of this franchise.
It's going to be crazy here tomorrow.
You've
got a guy in the lineup hitting third.
I know it.
It's going to be fun.
The most popular DH getting one or two at bats ever.
There you go. Matt, thanks for coming on. All appreciate right, Mike, it. Good luck to you.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.